Number right here. Are you loading on this TV?
All right, everyone. Welcome. Today is May 21st, 2015, and this is the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3388. Invite Representative Evans. Come on up.
Oh, sorry.
Do you have 3388?
I do. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3388 allows a law enforcement unit to sponsor a reserve officer for training as a police officer, and it allows reserve officers who are so sponsored to pay for that training as a police officer with cash or with GI Bill education benefits. It has some requirements for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to increase class sizes, and it requires the agency to conduct an impact study.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative.
Co-Chair Williamson, Senator Shields, thank you for the opportunity to be here. As I was getting ready, I must confess, I'm having a little bit of flashbacks. The last time I was here was after disaster, where I had to ask Senator Johnson for some things for different agency expenses related to floods. So I'll try to keep my comments on track today. The bill 3388 really is a bill that would provide the opportunity for folks that have access to federal funding through the GI Bill. The goal, and again, I understand that there is some potential changes to this bill, and I am welcome all of those. I think that those are great ideas. The concept basically says that we have folks coming back from the military, many of which are going to be interested in public safety, especially law enforcement. And because of access to the GI Bill, we could potentially have an opportunity to have our cake and eat it too. Some cities could continue to do as they have for some time, going through the hiring process, sending folks to the academy, getting them back, training them up. And for some, this bill opens the door. Some could have a relationship, perhaps be a reserve officer, have a relationship with a chief or a sheriff, know that they want to go into law enforcement. Basically use the GI Bill to pay the freight for that experience at the academy, stay under the relationship, under the guidance of a senior leader, a chief or a sheriff. And the potential here is that we could actually have some reserves getting road time that have been trained as full police officers, helping especially in some areas that can't necessarily afford a full-time police force. And the goal, again, is to begin the discussion. I'm open to any amendments, any changes. The bottom line is this. The GI Bill right now is providing an option, I think, to accelerate the workforce training and placement of a generation of folks that have a lot of skills that right now, I think, if we provide them a path for success, we can actually buy down some of the costs of the reintegration process that aren't so pretty. So I'm going to stop there and try to respond to any questions you might have.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Evans, for bringing this bill. I've worked hard today to try to get everyone involved and ask this committee to approve carrying over the work session. And I've talked to my office, or I have talked to Director of Veterans Affairs, and talked to the committee chair, John Lively, and I think I completely support Representative Evans's effort here to get these guys trained as reserve forces and say something comes up. But we're looking at over 500,000 or maybe 700,000 financial impact. So what I'm going to work, I'd like to work with Representative Evans and other people and see if we can bring you back. Maybe my thinking outside the box, my idea maybe right now is that we do a pilot project for 3 years to see what the impact, how many veterans we get, and then we can evaluate it and also address the police academy, public safety standards and training to see if the positions that they're asking for, if that can be done by the veterans. I think it can be done by the Veterans Affairs. It may not be co-located at the police academy. So that's my ideas, Madam Chair, and I think Representative Evans said he had no objection to trying to see if we could do that and change to the bill a little bit to provide this service to our veterans, which we want to do, an opportunity, mm-hmm. and it also helps our public safety forces, but look at the cost of it and how we can make that a little more bearable.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? All right. With that, Senator Bates.
Quick question. When I read this, only a cost to the state I could see or to the veterans was for the officer to, because this program is not accredited by or not accepted by the VA to pay benefits against. If you talk to our delegation, our D.C. delegation about this, I mean, I can't think of a better way to spend GI benefits than to go to this great school, which we all know about, come out and get a job as a police officer in our state. I mean, why is that not accredited, or whatever the appropriate phrase for it is?
Co-Chair Williamson, Senator Bates, I have actually talked a lot, some would say too much, but right now a lot with our federal delegation about this. And they actually see the opportunity in working this to where it actually does what the GI Bill was designed to do. And again, the GI Bill, without getting too much into the history of how it kind of changed, the Vietnam-era GI Bill was not the same as the World War II GI Bill. In 2006, they tried...
Trust me, I know.
Yes, sir. I know.
in
2006, they tried to get it back into what it was supposed to be. So it actually, the way it's written, it'll pay for any training program that could lead to employment. And that's why it'll pay the state's highest tuition for universities, for trade schools, for community colleges. And in this case, DPSSC could set the price to make that happen. So I suspect once it's actually online, the accreditation question will go away, and that we can actually show in the proof of product that it can happen. I also want to emphasize that in discussions with the director of DPSST, who's now sitting next to me, and his deputy, there was another piece of this puzzle that I was excited about developing during the interim, having to do with an apprenticeship approach that may, in fact, help accelerate getting folks into work in training environments even faster as a supplement to this. So I don't know if that's what he's going to be talking about, but I know that there are a number of pieces that we could bring together so that it actually is a model program. And thank you for the question, Senator.
Oh, thanks. Just a quick follow-up. Mm-hmm. Would you consider an amendment to carve out the Marines? Ex-Army. That's just the way it is, okay?
Sir, I understand. We could make the forms in crayon, so it's easier for me.
Director, go right ahead.
With respect,
we'll shut this down.
Right.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair Williamson. I always seem to come in right at the back end of an interesting discussion. So I'll start by saying commend Representative Evans' service in the military and his efforts, as well as this body's efforts to make sure we're taking care of veterans. And DPSST obviously is involved in that. As currently proposed, the bill does create some conflicts for us, and I just wanted to take a few minutes to walk through that. And we've shared these with Representative Evans, and that's why we threw out the apprenticeship idea. Currently, reserves cannot attend the academy. As a lot of you know, we have a capacity issue currently just getting full-time hired officers in. In some cases, they're waiting for more than 90 days to get into a basic class. Just this morning, we looked at stats. So if an officer is hired today, they're going to be scheduled for the October class. So we have a capacity issue. We have a campus that has room, but we need to add capacity to pick up this project if we do it. And there's an expense to that, with the anticipation that we're going to get people coming in that want to be police officers. The other thing, and this is why the apprenticeship idea is one that we floated, if we open the door to reserves, we're basically opening up a fee-based program for anybody that wants to come in to be police officers, some of which we may not want to be trained as police officers. So there's no fence, if you will, in place to screen out people other than your reserve officer. And the other thing is that means they're not employed. They may not be certified at the end of their training, so we can obviously get their GI Bill benefit, provide them with training, but they may not end up getting a job in the end. So we're very cautious about that. I mentioned a self-sponsorship concern. That opens up the door that we have not had a discussion in Oregon about letting anybody come to the academy, and this does that. The other thing is this is a change in our business philosophy. We would have to, and I know, I believe Representative Whitson talked about the partnership with Cameron Smith's Office of Veterans Affairs. We've had that discussion. This is not as easy as flipping a switch and all of a sudden training military members. We're interested in the discussion. Obviously, if there's dollars to be gained to offset the cost, as a lot of you know, when we testified in front of you with our budget, it takes between a year and 18 months to get a new police officer, sheriff's deputy, state trooper online, fully functional to work by themselves. So the apprenticeship idea that we proposed is if we, the state, and the local employer can offset that cost of that first year, why wouldn't we do it? The idea that we kicked around, and I know Representative Gorsuch, Representative Barker will remember a program years ago called Police Corps. Police Corps was just that idea, is to get people like an ROTC program that had a commitment at the end of their training that they will be hired. They had a job, and the federal government, through Department of Justice grants, paid for not only the training, but also their employer's costs. So that's why the apprenticeship idea is the one that we proposed, that really gets, I think, the biggest benefit from the GI Bill, and not just a 16-week nugget that we have. Ours is important. Obviously, you know what it costs us to do that, but that would be a more comprehensive view of this. So that's why we talked about that issue. So again, we're not against the discussion, but there's some things that we're concerned about in the current construct of the bill that opens up a lot of doors that I think we're concerned about. Just as some side note, we have currently three basic police classes in session. Roughly 30% of those are military veterans coming back, so they are getting jobs in law enforcement, and Representative Evans is spot on. Probably all of them raise their hands that they are currently getting their post 9/11 benefits. So in addition to being employed and coming to the academy, they're all collecting approximately $1,600 per month for being a GI and getting their benefits. So we are taking advantage of the program, just I don't think to the full extent that potentially is out there.
Go ahead.
Co-Chair Williams, if I could clarify, sometimes terms are important. Many of the folks that are back in the workforce are getting benefits, but the GI Bill benefit is specifically about workforce training, development, or education. So what may be the case for many of them is they're receiving health access because of a rating and perhaps some compensation that is not related to the GI Bill. The GI Bill, in this case, the reason that it's, I think, helpful is it helps share the cost, because if they're interested in that as a career anyway, they could pay the rate that DPSST establishes. So they could continue to get the benefits they're already getting regardless of the GI Bill, but they could also use that GI Bill that for many people are not being used in this generation. So, thank you.
Barker.
Thank you. So, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Excellent.
When I started the, I was in college when the GI Bill started. I already started school. So when I graduated, I still had some benefits left over. And when I was hired by the state police, when about the time I finished that academy, somebody over there had done some paperwork, and so I got a check for $1,000 or something, because and it was like the apprentice program, the COPS program paid
very well.
We hired people that had to have a college graduation. I remember we had these people; they walked in, and they handed them $30,000 to come through the door, which is a good bonus for the job they wanted anyway. But federal dollars, they don't count. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barker. All right. So you all will work together on this bill.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll close the public hearing now.
Thank you.
And I look forward to amendments.
Thank you all.
All right.
Do you have a preference? It's all in one. It's all in a single bill.
Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5045. Come on down, whoever's coming on down. Oh, they don't have to. Okay, never mind.
They have to if we have questions. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The purpose of House Bill 5045, is to complete legislative actions taken on behalf of the Department of Corrections to address budgetary shortfalls in the current 13-15 budget and to provide additional resources to the Oregon Department of Forestry, again in the current biennium's budget. The bill appropriates $7.2 million general fund to the Department of Corrections for the remaining budget shortfall that was identified when Senate Bill 5543 passed. They had requested $32.8 million, and you appropriated $29 million. So that's the $3.8 million shortfall that still exists. And there are unexpected health care costs added to that in the amount of $4.3 million associated with a significant increase in the use of the newest hepatitis C medication, the annual charge for hemophilia medication, and increased costs for other drugs, as well as outside health care provision. Department savings of $0.9 million offset the total need. I would also mention that this is a department-wide rebalance. Some divisions had more savings, others had more needs. For the Department of Forestry, $2.3 million general fund is appropriated for the payment of premium costs for catastrophic fire insurance related to the 2015 fire season and for the payment of the 2013-15 biennial interest expense related to the line of credit established with the Oregon State Treasury for the Department of Forestry. So if there are questions, we have experts in the audience.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
I covered it already.
Oh, you did? All right, good. Never mind. It's discussed while I was outside. To your satisfaction?
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yes.
I have a question. Maybe Linda can answer, or Director Peters come up. So I understand why we're adding to the corrections budget for the hepatitis C. What are we going to have to add to their budget for 15-17? Do we know that's
projections?
Representative Wisnant, the department expected costs at this level, but they didn't expect them this soon.
Okay.
So
good.
The 15-17
so
budget
you think we're covered
is well
for
built.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session. House Bill 5045.
Can I go through the amendment? The dash one amendment to 5045 to adjust general fund appropriations adds funding and subtracts funding as follows. For the Department of Corrections Operations and Health Services, adds $8,274,768 general fund. For administration, general services, and human resources, the general fund addition is $1,179,749. As part of the rebalance, there's a reduction to offender management and rehabilitation in general fund of $765,259 and a reduction in community corrections for $1,466,004. For the Department of Forestry and the Fire Protection Division, there is a general fund addition of $2,328,401.
Ready for motion? Mm-hmm. Madam Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 5045.
Senator Shields moves the LFO recommendation to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 5045. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 4055 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Shields moves House Bill 5045 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? So moved.
Carriers.
Representative Wisnant, let's carry it on our side.
Senator Bates, would you like me to carry?
Yes, because on Friday, they commonly am not here. I'm down in the practice. And this particular weekend, I'll be harassing trout.
Okay. Well, I guess the question would be, I'll be on the carried on the floor.
Yes.
All right.
Not carried on the floor.
Close the work session. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2228.
Do you understand this?
Kind of strange. You mix corrections and a forestry, but it's a rebound thing, huh?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2228 requires the Oregon State Police to establish a voluntary fingerprint retention program through which OSP would retain fingerprint cards and facsimiles of fingerprints received from the FBI or created during a state criminal records check. These records would be made available to agencies or districts subscribing to the voluntary fingerprint retention program. The bill requires the Department of Administrative Services to adopt rules for program administration, and it allows OSP to adopt a program subscription fee.
Excellent. Thank you. Stacy and Phil.
Yeah. Phil's out of the room, so you got the set. Oh, there
Phil. You, you almost missed it, buddy.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields. I'm actually Jeff Aiken with the Department of Human Services, and we thought it might be wise to have me come up and testify.
Everyone
first,
come up
just
at
to,
once.
Just to cover the technical aspects of the bill itself, and then let everyone else speak to the aspects of it. The Department of Human Services applied for a grant to the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services back in 2012, which the legislature approved in 2013. I'm the manager of that grant under the Department of Human Services, but it crosses many agency lines, Department of Administrative Services specifically. We were granted $3 million over a three-year period with a $1 million match that was approved specifically for the purposes of streamlining and improving our background check systems. And this wrap-back system is a part of that. The grant requires that the state of Oregon develops and tests a wrap-back system, which we intend on doing. This bill would allow that to happen as well as implementation. In putting together the legislation for this system, for the wrap back system, we really wanted to be cognizant not only of the safety of the vulnerable individuals that we serve, but also of the employment rights of people wanting to serve them, and also of the privacy rights of everyone involved. It's been a very difficult balancing act that we've taken a number of years to do. This bill is a result of the Oregon Elder Abuse Prevention Work Group, came out of there, and then some collaborative work with SEIU, the Oregon Healthcare Association, and the ACLU as well, and trying to best balance those. Of course, in a situation where we're retaining fingerprint information and conducting background checks, it's, you know, not everyone's going to be happy all the time, but we feel that we're very close to the kind of the best possible situation. There are other states that have developed similar systems under the National Background Check Program under the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. I just returned from a conference in Baltimore, Maryland, with those states talking about the systems they've put together. A unique approach Oregon is taking in an attempt to really protect the privacy and security of individuals enrolling is to make this a voluntary system. Other states have not chosen to do that. It's a way for us to try and provide administrative relief to the groups that are required to do background checks while improving safety and respecting the privacy and security rights of individuals. So the fiscal impact of this bill is covered by the grant that was granted to us in 2013. It's an important piece I wanted out. I'll let the others testify, but I'll stay back if anyone has any technical questions.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Wisnack.
No, yes, sir.
Is there a maintenance of effort? Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a maintenance of effort by past to forever on this from Oregon? Is it going to cost us in the future to keep doing this program?
Co-Chair Wilson, Co-Chair Shields, Representative Wisnack, fantastic question. There is an ongoing cost to this system maintenance and what have you. And then the initial subscription, when an individual does decide to opt in, it'll have to be a fingerprint-based background check. That'll be fees paid to the Oregon State Police and to the FBI, and a subscription paid to the FBI. But those are one-time costs. Outside of that, it'll just be the personnel administration that occurs now through multiple background checks.
I know that Representative Nathanson's worked. I've worked with her on this too when we were actually in education. So I really had a tough time trying to understand the program last night. I mean, if we need them, we're requiring everyone to get them just about, but also the cost is getting unbelievable for the state of Oregon to administer these programs. So I'll probably be yes on anything on this because I don't understand it yet, but maybe with further testimony I'll understand it more. But it's one of these things, we want everyone background, but that costs a lot of money. And I think Nathanson's goal, and I supported, was trying to find ways that we could streamline it or have other people use it or pass it around. So I don't know how this fits in. I'm sorry, but that's fine.
I can, Co-Chair Wilson, Co-Chair Shield, Representative Wilson, I can provide a little bit of that, and then the others who will testify can give some more real-life examples. But today, to use a colloquial phrase I use, is we background check folks to death. Every opportunity we have, we're processing a background check, and for good cause. You know, we're trying to protect those who can't speak for themselves. But the intent of this wrap-back system is to be able to retain those fingerprint information so that the agency interested, being Department of Human Services, Education, whichever agency subscribes, receives what the FBI calls continuous evaluation of the criminal record. So in that case, we don't have to conduct background check after background check. So the privacy concerns of, you know, retaining fingerprints is what's weighed against now consistently collecting fingerprints as we do today. So the goal really is to streamline this for everyone, the companies, the facilities, the vulnerable population, and the subject individuals providing the care.
Question. What's the life of the retention?
Co-Chair Wilson, Co-Chair Shields, Senator Winters. The FBI provides three levels of a lifetime of the piece. One is a 2-year, one is a 5-year, and one is a quote unquote lifetime. Lifetime being the amount of time that we're interested in the individual, that they're still a subject individual. One of the key parts in the engrossed version of the bill is that we do give individuals an opportunity to opt out once they have opted in to there. And in that case, the bill does provide that those fingerprints are then destroyed.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Can you tell me who are the members of the Elder Abuse Work Group, and particularly are there any senators involved? I can't remember.
Oh, Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, that's There are. I know that Representatives Hoyle and Gilliam are the co-chairs in there. We do have representation from the Senate, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you who that is.
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, for the record, Phil Bentley with the Oregon Healthcare Association. My understanding is that the legislative members of the Elder Abuse Prevention Task Force include Representatives Gilliam and Hoyle and Senators Knoop and Roblin.
That's right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chairs Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. Stacey Cowan with SEIU Local 503, here today to testify in support of House Bill 2228. This bill is very important to our caregivers. SEIU represents over 25,000 people that care for children, people with disabilities, seniors, and people with developmental disabilities. Our members care for people in their homes, and then others work in facilities, including nursing homes and facilities for people with developmental disabilities, just to give you some context. So as was mentioned, this bill will streamline the process for background checks. So what we find is that many people who do care do so in different types of settings. So some workers will work in a home care setting. Some will do work in nursing homes with a facility for people with developmental disabilities. And then some may work in two different nursing homes. And then still others might care for seniors during the day and children at night. So the way that the system is set up right now is that they would need a different background check for each one of those jobs. One of our members who works at a nursing home recently told me that he went through three different background checks in 6 months. The cost, this obviously costs the state money to be able to process all of these individual background checks, but obviously it costs workers money, and it's just frankly a really inefficient system. We've been working for 4 years to find balance, as Jeff mentioned, to find that balance between really making sure that we have a streamlined system that makes sense but also protects the privacy of individuals. We believe that there's been a lot of really time and effort put into this legislation, and it's produced a strong bill with some national funding, and we really think that we're in a good place to move forward. So with that, we would just urge you to support the legislation. Again, this is something that's very important to us, and we put a lot of time and effort into. So thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you. Phil.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee, again, my name is Phil Bentley with the Oregon Healthcare Association. We represent over 700 long-term care providers throughout the state, and so we just wanted to lend a perspective from an employer's perspective around how we believe House Bill 2228 would improve background check process. All of our employees are required to go through a background check, and as Stacey said, we run into instances where an employee who's moving from one facility to another, even within the same employer group, has to go through a new background check. So you just have lots of layers in the process today that creates additional costs. It also creates delays, and it makes it more difficult for our providers to manage their workforce. So we think this bill is a good step in the right direction. It also balances the interests of privacy protections and the security interests of our residents. And we want to thank the work that the work groups have done from both sides of this issue. We think we have a good bill and would encourage your support.
Great. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Explain to me that requires the department to destroy fingerprint upon requests receiving information that individuals no longer participating in the program. What does that mean?
I'm going to let our technical expert handle that question.
Thank you for your comment. Thank you for your testimony.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, Representative Wisnett. So what that would mean is, in a real-life situation, if someone is employed, say, at a nursing facility, and they've enrolled in the wrap-back system, and then they end employment, they leave the industry, and they move on. At that point, specifically for the Department of Human Services, we have a tracking mechanism that when the employers are actively engaged in it, we'll know that they're no longer working there. So we will unenroll them from that system. There'll be a notification to Oregon State Police and thereby a notification to the FBI that we're no longer interested in the individual, and those prints will be destroyed. And as I said in response to Senator Winter's question earlier, the individual has an opportunity. If during their employment they no longer want their fingerprints retained, they can have them destroyed as well.
Any questions?
Just follow-up. Because practically everything we do, Madam Chair, requires a background check. And I think there is a value in the retention of the information to keep individuals from having to resubmit and resubmit, and that's the whole concept behind this, correct? So, we had a conversation earlier, Phil, and I believe that on the privacy side, that ACLU is also all right with the direction that we're taking. Or have they had the conversation?
We'll have Kimberly come up.
Yeah.
Okay, well, talk about the ACLU.
Yeah, and Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, Senator Winters, I don't want to downplay at all the privacy and security concerns. We've taken very seriously those and partnered closely with the ACLU and have every intention of continuing that, regardless of the direction that the bill takes.
Thank you. Kimberly, do you want to come on down? And
thank you. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I would like to start just by prefacing my comments by saying that I do appreciate that the proponents of this bill did work very carefully with us on this bill. At the same time, we do have concerns, and the concerns stem from the fact that when we were initially working on this bill, our understanding was that the only agency that would be retaining the prints would be Oregon State Police and not the FBI. So we worked through the bill. We put in a lot of privacy protections, and I do very much appreciate, we as an organization appreciate those privacy protections. We would have been a lot less concerned if it was just OSP retaining the prints. Then sort of at the end of the process, we all, including the proponents, became aware of the fact that what would be required is that the bill actually be amended to its current version, which not only allows OSP to retain the prints, but also the FBI. And that was the point at which I became quite nervous and did some research. And when I looked on the FBI's website and their information about this program, it's part of what's called the Next Generation Identification System. And what the FBI wants to collect is a database that includes everyone in the whole United States, their fingerprints, their iris scans, their face for facial recognition technology, tattoos, and so on. The idea is that this database is going to be, I mean, essentially what Herbert Hoover wanted a long, long time ago with everybody's prints in a system. In the current system, in the AFIS system the FBI has, they have civilian prints separated from prints of folks with criminal backgrounds. It is entirely possible that the FBI will do the same thing with the NGI system. But the problem is they've been very evasive about what they want to do with this. And civil liberties organizations like the ACLU have been calling on the FBI to do a privacy analysis, which they have refused to do up until this point. So we don't actually know how they're going to use it. Simultaneously, there are these things called portable biometric readers that our affiliates around the country have been receiving reports of police departments using. And what they are is they're a little scanner that they can use in the field to capture your fingerprint, capture your iris scan, take a photo of you, and so on. Those things can also be used to pick up prints off of surfaces. And the people who are making these manufacturers of these portable biometric readers, they promote them as something that is a future law enforcement tool where rather than asking you who you are, law enforcement could pick up your print off of a surface and run that through their system and match it with NGI, and then that would help them identify you. And on one of the websites, it talks about how they could then use it to evaluate your dangerousness before they interact with you, which obviously raises a lot of concerns for us. While we are very appreciative that this is a voluntary system, we still have very great reservations about allowing the FBI to retain this information. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this is something that we are deeply concerned about. So I do appreciate the proponents working with us, but we unfortunately are still opposed.
Thank you. Questions? All right.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session. All right.
Oh, yes. I guess that would be useful. Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2228A to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Shields moves House Bill 2228A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Krieger.
Came out the other day about the federal government keeping the records of phone calls and things of this nature. You start putting this on top of it. Who is behind all the motivation of this? There's a whole bunch of ways that three of us here could talk to you about apprehending criminals. If you want to go out and do your job without going to this degree, I can't support the concept. Not you better be careful. Mm-hmm. Think about what you're doing. The federal government, I don't care if it's controlled by Republicans or Democrats. And I always say, when the natural resource committees, there's nothing the federal government does in natural resources that doesn't turn into a quagmire of bureaucracy, the Endangered Species Act. This is not a good thing to be doing.
Representative Gorsuch.
I agree with Representative Krieger. The part about the FBI disturbs me greatly, and I don't trust them to use this as they should. There is evidence of the FBI with more lenient search and seizure applications still violating those rules. So I'm of no on this.
Any other discussion?
Can we stand at ease?
Yep, we're going to stand at ease.
Draw my motion.
Yeah, you with them?
They're in the business.
You want to withdraw your
Are
motion?
We on? Okay.
Yeah,
yes, Madam Co-Chair, I would like to withdraw my motion.
Senator Shields withdraws his motion, and with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2228. Any further action? We're set it over. Yep. All right. Is there anything else for the committee? We are adjourned.
Once you come by, let's hear it.
Glad.